Now to the war in Ukraine, where continued attacks inside of the mainland of Russia have prompted Russian President Vladimir Putin to say he is done negotiating with Ukraine. So does that mean no peace negotiations on the table? What does that mean? Last night, we heard President Biden saying that they're going to stand with Ukraine until the end, and that after 3 years of supporting Ukraine, they are free. They are a free country. This comes 24 hours after we learn Ukraine, of course, is banning Christian church in Ukraine. So what does freedom exactly mean? Let's ask former UN weapons inspector, former U.S. Marine Scott Ritter, who has, probably the most acute understanding of what's going on there, better than just about anyone. Scott, great to see you. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
So when you heard President Biden last night say, we're going to stand with Ukraine until the end, that Vladimir Putin thought he would just walk all over Ukraine within a few months, but 3 years later, Ukraine is still free thanks to NATO weapons, U.S. monies flowing into Ukraine. And now we learn Vladimir Putin saying he's done negotiating with Ukraine. Can you help us unpack all of these big movements over the past 24 hours?
Well, first of all, I think Biden's statements reflect the ignorance of not only the man, Joe Biden, but of the U.S. government, and indeed, I would say the United States as a whole, about Russia, Ukraine, and this conflict. The irony is the United States took away my passport and denied me the ability to go back to Russia for a third time in a span of a year. Why would I dare travel to Russia? Perhaps to learn more about the Russian people, the Russian nation, what motivates Russia, how they think, what the Russian soul is, what the Russian perspective is. Important things, if you're going to take a look at the broader picture of what the Russian objective in Ukraine is. You see, for people like Biden, people in the U.S. government, the American people, we only think in terms of, good versus evil, black versus white. We are unable to comprehend that this conflict between Russia and Ukraine is between brothers, that this is very much a civil war that's brought on not because of differences of opinion of the brothers themselves, but that one brother was pushed by outside powers to behave aggressively against the other brother, compelling that brother to respond. This is not your normal conflict. To say you stand by Ukraine to the end shows an absolute ignorance of what Ukraine is, what Ukraine really is. And that is an extension of a larger Slavic nation united by language, cultural history, religion. So to say we stand with them to the end means what? It means that we're going to sit by and watch them die, because that's what the end is, the death of Ukraine. And Biden knows this. Biden has watched his policies be translated into hundreds of thousands of dead Ukrainian soldiers, tens of millions of displaced Ukrainian civilians, trillions of dollars of damage to the Ukrainian economy, and now a situation where there was once hope for peace. I just want to remind everybody that while Biden's narrative of Russia seeking to conquer Kiev in days may play well to an ignorant American audience, it's not reflective of the reality. Russia was always looking for a peaceful outcome. It was compelled to initiate what it calls the special military operation, which was a joint collective security action to prevent Ukraine from attacking the Russian people of Donbas. But the purpose wasn't to occupy Kiev, but rather to compel Kiev to the negotiating table, which 6 days later, Kiev went. And less than a month later, or a little bit more than a month later, they had a viable peace agreement, the Istanbul Communique. 1 April 2022, could have brought an end to this war. The war wasn't extended because of Putin's ambitions. The war was extended because the United States refused to allow Ukraine to have a peaceful outcome, because we are not friends of Ukraine. That's the other irony here. Biden acting as if America is Ukraine's friend. We are not the friend of Ukraine. We view Ukraine as a tool of a larger objective of destroying Russia. And the second that tool gets blunted, destroyed, damaged, rather than repairing it, we throw it to the side. And that's what we're in the process of doing right now, throwing Ukraine to the side. You know, the objective of the United States to bring down Russia has failed. If anything, this conflict has strengthened Russia. We know it's strengthened Russia militarily. The Russian army today is bigger, stronger, more capable than it was when this conflict started. Russian defense industry is outproducing the collective West by 1.5 times. The West is collapsing. The German economy is such that they cannot continue to fund Ukraine or the German military. And the same holds true for almost the rest of Europe as a whole. So, what Biden is talking about is just pure bloodlust, pure fantasy. And the saddest thing is that those Americans in the audience that were cheering him were buying into this, while the Ukrainians that they pretend to support continue to die.
What happens to Ukraine now? Vladimir Putin saying he's done negotiating. There's no more negotiating. Well, what does that look like then? Does it lead to a takeover of Kiev? Where do you see this going from Putin's perspective?
I've asked this question to a number of Russians trying to elicit the response. And they always refer me back to Vladimir Putin's words before putting their own interpretation on this. When this conflict started, Vladimir Putin gave a speech to the world, to the Russian people, to the people of Ukraine, about why Russia was engaged in this. And I remember a lot of so-called Russian experts in the West were poo-pooing this speech. Ridiculous Russian propaganda, et cetera, especially when Putin talked about the history of Ukraine, or more specifically, the lack of history of Ukraine. And he called Ukraine a creation of Vladimir Lenin. Lenin's mistake. I heard those words today. I heard them yesterday, and I've heard them before when I talked to people about what the future of Ukraine is. They said that Russia will correct Lenin's mistake. And I said, well, what does that mean? They mean that Ukraine didn't exist before Lenin created it. Russia will correct Lenin's mistake. And the implication is that Ukraine will not exist when this war is over. Now, whether or not that translates into actual Russian policy has yet to be seen. But Vladimir Putin is a man who is very careful in his use of words. And by giving voice to the artificiality of the Ukrainian state, when he says that there will be no negotiations with Ukraine going forward, the implications of that could be that there will be no Ukraine going forward. And this opinion is held by members of the Russian Duma, actively involved in Russian politics. This is held by serving Russian officers. It doesn't automatically mean that their personal opinion becomes policy, but these are the people who advise Vladimir Putin and his inner circle. So Zelensky may have made a mistake that is fatal to the modern nation state of Ukraine by going into Kursk. He may have, in fact, sealed the fate of Ukraine insofar as that when this war ends, and it will end, there will be no Ukraine.
What does NATO do then? Will NATO sort of sit back and allow that to happen? Do they have any choice in the matter? You hear Biden last night, you hear all the neocons and all the war hawks, the war pigs. Clearly, don't seem like they're going to want to let that happen. Where do you see NATO going then?
Well, NATO really doesn't have any choice. The conventional military capacity of NATO to wage ground conflict against Russia is close to nil. It's a completely different war that's being fought right now, one that NATO isn't prepared or organized to fight. If you take a NATO formation, a division, a corps, and you advance it against their Russian counterparts, this isn't going to be old doctrinal warfare. They're going to be hit with swarms of drones that they don't have a defense for. All of their equipment will be destroyed within a 24-hour period. Their communications will be jammed. Their troops operating in large formations will be devastated by these small FPV drones. As the troops break up into smaller units, they'll be hunted down by swarms of FPV drones that NATO has no defense for. NATO simply can't sustain, which means NATO will then seek to bring about a strategic, side to this fight, deep strikes into Russia to punish Russia. And again, what I've been told, and I had a very, very chilling conversation today, just an hour before this, apparently the Russian leadership has made a decision that it will not sit back and allow NATO the opportunity to carry out deep strikes against Russia. That if it gets to the point where Russia believes that NATO is preparing such strikes, Russia will react preemptively, and the preemption will be decisive and terminal for many European nations. In short, Russia will launch a preemptive nuclear strike against Europe that destroys entire nation states and then dare the United States to do something about it. Again, this isn't the policy of Vladimir Putin. This is the policy as articulated by people who are in the Russian government and who advise the Russian president. It scared the living dog poop out of me, and I hope it scares the dog poop out of every person that's listening to this broadcast.
I mean, for something to scare you, that's chilling. It's terrifying. And you know, to think that they're going to continue to poke this bear and want to see, I mean, I just don't understand what their end game is. Where, if how does NATO think that they're going to solve this unless they completely step back from this? We spoke to a source, high-ranking Russian general as well in the Kursk region, and a friend and source of the show, saying that he's sort of pleading with the Americans right now to stop this right now, because this will be World War III and nuclear war. This coming from a Russian general on the front lines. This is going to lead to nuclear war. I mean, you're hearing it, your sources, our sources, saying the same thing.
Well, I mean, that's the direction we're heading. And, you know, what is the American response? To send the FBI into my house to threaten me under the Foreign Agent Registration Act for daring give voice to these Russian voices. Do they want the Russian voices silenced? Do they want the American people ignorant? I mean, I always, you know, people are like, well, Scott, you're a little too close to this subject. You're taking it too personal. You know, I spoke out against the war in Iraq in 2002, 2003. In doing so, I traveled to Iraq many times. I met with the Iraqi government. I interviewed senior Iraqi officials. I made a documentary film with the assistance of the Iraqi government, not because I was a servant of the Iraqi government or a foreign agent, because I was trying to stop a war that didn't need to be fought, that was being sold to the American people on a lie. Today, I'm trying to do the same thing. I'm trying to stop a nuclear war between the United States and Russia. And in order to empower my desire, I seek to learn more about Russia, to get insights into the Russians so I can better explain to an American audience where the Russians are coming from. And for this, I'm considered to be a foreign agent. The American government is stifling free speech, and the consequences of that is to sustain a level of ignorance about the American people that make them powerless to stand up to Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Donald Trump, and others when they articulate the continuation of these policies, which your Russian source said, if they're not stopped, will lead to war. We're on a slippery slope to hell, and all the United States government is doing is pouring Vaseline on it.
Yeah, and then Joe Biden wants to get up there and warn us all that if Donald Trump becomes president, he might weaponize the Department of Justice and use the FBI to go after political adversaries. I mean, I almost laughed and fell out of my chair when I heard him say that. You're literally watching it happening right now, using the Department of Justice to go after individuals like you who are trying to prevent a nuclear war. This is the madness that we're in right now. Remember when the Democrats used to be the party of peace and anti-war? Man, that was a long time ago. Scott Ritter, we appreciate you. Our audience appreciates you. We're thankful that you're safe. We're sorry what happened to you and the weaponization of the DOJ to go after you. But thank you for always telling the truth. And thank you for trying to be and thank you for, I mean, being so strong in the sea of all of that. I mean, I loved watching you come out after what those people did to you. And just stand up, you're not going to silence me. And I just got chills. I said, thank you. Thank you. We need more people who aren't going to be silenced in this. So thank you for your strength.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your support.